Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Focus on Albany. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and my guest today is Howie Hawkins. Well, Howie Hawkins ran for governor in 2014 on the Green Party line, and he also ran at the same time Donald Trump was running for president on the Republican line. So Howie is going to share his views on Trump, the gubernatorial candidate, and versus Trump, the presidential candidate of this year. Howie, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
So are you shocked to see how well Donald Trump is resonating as of right now?
Yeah, I would say surprised. The traction he's got, like most people, I didn't anticipate. And actually, I was surprised he actually ran, because in 2014, he kept talking about it, and he was sort of playing this public conversation with Carl Paladino. In 2014,
right.
Paladino said, if Trump doesn't run, I will. In the end, neither of them actually ran. And Trump has, you know, he was toying with running for president in 2000. So I thought it was just, you know, he's a publicity hound, and I thought this is just a way to get him attention. But this time he's actually doing it.
So, and he's resonating. He's resonating very, very well throughout the country. Can you explain why you think he's resonated, and why do you think that his message was not as embraced last year when he was running for governor, or 2 years ago when he was running for governor?
Well, I think he saw what happened to Carl Paladino in 2010. The kind of message that Trump's putting out there is an extension, a culmination of what Nixon's campaign called the Southern Strategy. And that is, you appeal to the fears and resentments of the white working class and middle class and peel them away from, at that time, was their traditional base in the New Deal coalition, where they were focused on progressive economic demands that came out of the New Deal. And instead of that, they began, you know, the trope then was, you know, blacks are welfare queens and, you know, criminals, and they're taking your stuff and you're supporting them with your taxes. That was the kind of message that they put out, often with dog whistles, you know, allusions that, you know, people knew what they were saying, but it wasn't explicit. And that continued through Reagan and, you know, right on down to today. And I think Trump is basically appealed to that base, which has been cultivated for 40 years. And, the encouraging thing, I think, for those of us that oppose that is that it is limited, you know, 20 to 30% of the electorate at best. And Paladino's, you know, terrible showing in 2010 shows how poorly that played in New York. I think Trump saw that kind of campaign won't work in New York, but maybe he can get the Republican nomination with that kind of message. And at this point, you know, it's working for him. Whether that will survive until the voting in late January, February, and so forth remains to be seen.
Well, you know, in 2012, Trump toyed with the idea of running for president, and then all of a sudden he disappeared. He disappeared, actually, right after the Washington Correspondents' Dinner when the president had made a couple of jokes about him. And then in 2014, he was pretty visible, and then all of a sudden he disappeared. I think this year he's made such an impact on the election so far. I think he has the luxury of, if he decides not to do it, to disappear. Would you agree?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this time he's actually declared he's out campaigning. Before, he was saying, I might run, and here's, you know, some things I would do. And he, you know, like in 2014, he would speak to Republican county committee meetings and stuff like that. But he never declared. This time he's declared, he's out there, he's been in a debate. I mean, given his, you know, I'm a winner message, he can't, you know, drop out at this point. So he's in it till he gets defeated or he wins.
Okay, do you think, you know, from what you saw in 2014, do you think that he is even surprising himself at the response to his candidacy? In other words, do you think he wasn't as serious about, you know, running as he should have been?
I think he decided this time he could be a contender, and therefore he was going in. He's probably surprised that he's, you know, leading in all the polls. That, you know, is probably more than he thought he could do initially. So since he's doing so well, he's definitely going to stay in.
Well, how do you think this is going to affect, since there's 17 people in the Republican primary for president, and Donald Trump and the doctor from Arizona seems to be the two top-tier candidates. Do you think it will? Do you think Ben Carson and Donald Trump will remain, or do you see anything on the horizon that could knock that down to almost invisibility?
Well, I think there's a wing of the Republican Party that realizes that you cannot insult and disrespect Latinos and expect to win the presidency. And Trump has done that in spades, which may win him the nomination but makes him unelectable in the fall if people come out and vote. And so there's the wing of the Republican Party that's got a more realistic view of what it will take to win the presidency. So they will cohere around another candidate, most likely Jeb Bush, who's got all the money. And even though he's not polling well right now with the voters in the primaries, you can do a lot with that money to build up your image and knock down Trump's. And, you know, the Republican establishment, the party organization and the donor elites are going to cohere around the alternative to Trump. So I think the likely scenario is it'll be Trump versus the establishment candidate as we go into the actual voting in the primaries. And that'll be interesting to see if the establishment can mobilize their voters and beat the base, which is alienated from the Republican elites like they are from all the elites. And Trump, ironically, given his billionaire status, and, you know, and he even makes fun of the way he has gamed the system by contributing to all these people who then owe him. And the thing about him, he's a lot like George Wallace, puts forward a racist kind of message, but he also has an economic populism in there. So when he says, you know, the hedge fund guys are not paying their fair share of taxes, you know, that base of the Republican Party that feels the elites have ignored them, that resonates with them. And when he talks about, you know, defending Social Security and Medicare, unlike the ideological elite, which wants to privatize them, he gets a response from that base of the Republican Party. And so it's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out.
You know, you as governor, you went, as a gubernatorial candidate, you went across the state. You spoke to many, many people. What do you think is the mindset of people who are embracing Donald Trump right now? What are their fears? What are their hopes? And why do you think they're embracing Trump?
I think a fear has been drummed up with them about immigrants, about Islamic political Islam, the extremists in the Middle East, and the idea that they're coming for us It's kind of like the old Red Scare and the communists. It's overblown, but that's the thing that people feel. It's sort of these other folks are not like us, and I'm talking about white working class and middle class people. And so Trump, you know, plays to their fears and resentments. And, you know, when he says I'm not politically correct, he basically says I'm going to insult people. I think also a lot of his supporters are not people that, you know, follow policy and politics closely. They want a strong leader, and that's something that he projects, you know, the strong man, which is another classic thing, along with the scapegoating and the, you know, little bits of economic populism, is the strong man appeal of fascism and the misogyny as well. So, you know, that's who he's appealing to. And those people are out there. And, you know, upstate New York has very conservative, particularly rural populations. I mean, we were the Timothy McVeigh came out of that milieu. We had Minuteman organizations. The concern about the SAFE Act, which I have some criticisms of, but that was so overblown. I mean, I unload trucks at UPS, and when that passed, I felt like I was back in the military unloading ammunition trucks, because people were buying up ammunition. They thought the government was going to confiscate their guns and their ammo. So they've been worked up into a kind of a frenzy, and Trump is appealing to them.
So how long do you think this will last? Do you think it'll carry into the convention? You think he could ride this into the convention?
Well, I think the primaries will determine who the nominee is long before the convention. And whether he will go to the convention and fight for platform planks, my immediate thought is no, because his campaign is not about policy. It's about an attitude. And if it doesn't get him the nomination, he will probably get behind whoever won and, you know, go back to whatever else he wants to do. That's my first thought. You know, I'm thinking on the Democratic side now. You know, Bernie Sanders is has a very policy-oriented campaign. Now, if he doesn't win the nomination, is he going to take it to the convention and fight for platform planks? The Democrats haven't seen that since Jesse Jackson in 1984. And it would be a long time since we'd seen that kind of fight. But I don't see Trump doing it, because he's not so much about policy as about his attitude. And if it doesn't get him the nomination, what's he going to fight for at the convention? He doesn't have any particular policies. I mean, I don't think he'd go there and fight for the let's deport 11 or 12 million undocumented people and have Mexico pay for the wall. That, you know, that wouldn't pass the Republican convention. It's so absurd. So I don't see him fighting to the convention. I see him fighting till he's either wins or loses the primaries.
Do people actually believe this wall stuff, do you think?
Yeah, some people do. I don't think they've thought it through. I mean, the kind of police state you'd have to create to hunt down all these people and the costs are just, you know, off the charts. Plus, you know, the immigrants that they want to deport, you know, he talks about crime, but the reality is the more immigrants you got in a city, first generation, the lower the crime rate. And these people are doing jobs that Americans are not willing to do at the pay that's offered. And Trump is taking advantage of them. And in his case, as David K. Johnston pointed out, he had 60 undocumented Polish workers on a construction site working without hard hats. You know, he got fined or something in court, and he said, well, I didn't know. But the judge said, how could you not know? They're walking around without hard hats. They're conspicuous. So, you know, those kind of I wonder what happens when, you know, the media really begins to vet him, because is he going to release his tax returns? Because he's taking advantage of a lot of these tax loopholes and lampoons. If he does, I suppose he could say, well, it was the law and I took advantage of it. I didn't want to be a sucker. I mean, he'd kind of probably put that kind of thing out. But it would be very revealing, and I wonder what his base would think. You know, this guy's a billionaire and he's not paying taxes like they do. The use of illegal immigrants – There's a, you know, the gaming industry in which he's so involved is not the the cleanest industry. So, you know, when the vetting starts, I wonder if it'll erode his base and people will begin to say, oh, he's just another hypocrite, and they'll peel away. I don't know, but, you know, we'll find out over the next 4 or 5 months.
Now, a lot of people think that the press has given President Obama a pass. Do you think that the press ultimately will wind up giving Donald Trump a pass?
No, because Obama's more in line with the liberal elites of this country. And by liberal, I mean they're socially liberal but economically neoliberal. In other words, they want to deregulate, privatize, have trade managed by corporations in these investor trade courts to solve resolve trade disputes that basically supersede U.S. law. That's what the elites want, and so Obama's very much in that mold. Trump is not. He's talking about protectionism, so he's talking about not privatizing Social Security and Medicare. And so he's not one of their people from their ideological point of view. So I think, you know, the Washington Post and the New York Times and those kind of media outlets, NBC, they'll begin bringing these things out about Trump. Unlike with Obama, they've, you know, gone along with his social liberalism, while when it comes to civil liberties, the military budget and wars and intervention overseas, the drone warfare, you know, basically handing the economy over to Wall Street and the military-industrial complex to the traditional elites that ran those parts of the government. You know, all that stuff Obama didn't get a lot of criticism on from the liberal elites. So I think it's
now,
different. I think Trump will get vetted as we get into the fall here.
Okay. Now, you know, you ran for governor and you didn't get as much press as Astorino and, of course, Cuomo didn't. And I'm sure you're in touch with Jill Stein, who's running for president on the Green Party line. Jill is not getting a lot of coverage, and she's talking substantive issues. Donald Trump is getting tons of coverage, but he is using scare tactics. He's using fear as his campaign mode. Why do you think that somebody with covering a campaign, oh, I'm sorry, in a campaign talking substantive issues is not getting the coverage, and somebody who is inciting fear is?
Well, I think there are two things there. One is the coverage focuses on the horse race, and Trump is up in the polls, and it's a surprise to everybody. So that's a big story. The interesting thing is Bernie Sanders is doing the same thing on the Democratic side, and he's not getting nearly the coverage, particularly from the New York Times and so forth, who, even from a horse race point of view, he ought to get more coverage. And, you know, then you get to the substance. Jill Stein's running on substance, but I don't think she'll get much coverage until after the primaries. And then they'll look at the horse race and find out that she's the Green Party candidate on the ballot in battleground states like Florida. And then they'll start saying, is she going to spoil it for Hillary Clinton or whoever the Democratic nomination is?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when she's going to get some coverage. And what I'm describing, all through that, they're not talking about policy. If it gets mentioned, it's, you know, lower down in the stories. It's not the headlines. And that's a problem with our media coverage. You look at how other countries, you know, cover campaigns, and, you know, the horse race is part of it, but they also lay out the policy. And they have debates like the Green, the sole member of parliament in Canada, Elizabeth May, who is a Green, was the speaker for her party in their national debate. Same thing in England with the Greens and every other country, but not in the United States. And that's a problem with our media coverage.
So, Howie, how are you what will you be doing to for this Labor Day weekend? Have anything planned exciting?
Well, I won't have to work, so I'm going to focus on getting my website and campaign materials together. I'm running for city auditor in the city of Syracuse, so I'm looking forward to having a block of time where I can really get a lot of that work done.
Harry, thank you for taking the time to be on Focus on Albany and to talk about Donald Trump. You've been listening to 2014 Green Party candidate Howie Hawkins. You've been listening to Focus on Albany. If you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or download on your smartphone. Listen anytime, anywhere. Howie, I forgot to ask you, if people do want to get involved in your race in Syracuse, how can they do so?
Google Hawkins for auditor, or Howie Hawkins for auditor, and in about 2 weeks, and there'll be a website. From there, you'll be able to donate if you're in the Syracuse area, volunteer. And I'm not announcing and beginning that part of the campaign until after the Democratic primaries are over. So just because everybody here, we got an assembly race in Syracuse and school board races and a primary and some of the council races in the city and the Democratic side. So that's where the focus is right now. So I'm not trying to compete with that until it's over.
Mm-hmm. So it'll be after next week that you'll be doing that?
Yeah.
Okay.
If they want to send me a message... If they want to send me a message in the meantime, they can go to the Hawkins for Governor website, and there's a contact us, email form, and send me a message. I'll get that, and I can respond.
Thank you, Howie. You have a great Labor Day weekend, and everybody listening, enjoy your weekend. Thank you. Thank you for listening to Focus on Albany. Have a great day. Bye.
Bye.